Do you all have Hebrew Bibles? I see Dave's got a Xerox sheet. It begins on page 1085, and the pericope for the pericope for today is Malachi 3 verses 14 through 18. But if you look and see how the Masoretes have divided this pericope, the paragraph division is between 3 verse 12 and 3 verse 13, and so the pericope in the BHS is actually Malachi 3 verses 13 through 18, and so I thought that we should begin translating with verse 13 and then go all the way through 18. Okay, so the first line of 3 verse 13, pardon my barbarous pronunciation of Hebrew, if that's how it sounds. Kazeku alai divrekem, amar Yahweh. The first line, we have Yahweh speaking, and that first verb is a call, a perfect third common plural of kazak, which means to be strong or to become strong. And also, BBD gives the translation for this particular verse as to be stout, or what's going on here? Small interruption, okay. I was wondering if we were in the right place, okay. To be stout, to be strong, to become strong, and what it is, the subject of this verb is your words, divrekem. So your words have become strong, alai, to me, or I would translate all here as against me. Yahweh has said, or Yahweh says. Most English translations take that perfect amar as says or saith. So your words have become strong against me, says Yahweh. The NIV translates that saying a little more idiomatically. The RSV and King James translate that your words have been strong against me. And NIV takes that a little more idiomatically and translates it, you have spoken harshly against me, which is I guess that captures the idea in more idiomatic English. But your words have been strong against me, says Yahweh. That's the first line. And then 13b. Va amartem ma nidbarnu aleka. And now the people's, that's an accusation God has made in 13a. You have spoken harshly against me, your words have been strong against me, and now the people respond. And you have said, what have we spoken against you? And the verb there, nidbarnu, is a nifal of the root devar, and BBD makes the note that the nifal use of devar is sort of reciprocal, the idea of you have spoken to speak among yourselves, to speak to one another. And that's how Dr. Bartelt takes it in the latest issue of Concordia Journal in his sermon study for this pericope. So you have responded, you masculine plural have said, what have we spoken against you? What have we, Yahweh says we're speaking against him, and we say, what have we done, answering that accusation? Ma here, King James and the NIV take ma as what. That would refer to the word, what is it we've said. The RSV, Revised Standard, takes that ma as how. In other words, so there could be, a little pull on how you want to translate that. What have we spoken against you, or how have we spoken against you? Okay, and that verse 13 then goes well with where the pericope begins now, verse 14. Amartem shagu avod Elohim. Okay, and now the prophet responds with the content of what they've said. In other words, how have their words been harsh against Yahweh? This is how. And notice the first part of verse 14, you have the Othnach under Elohim. So these first four words stand off from the rest of the verse. You have said, and then to translate this literally, Shagah is vain or emptiness. So vain, emptiness, and then we have the participle of avad, serving God, or vain, emptiness, worshiping God. And if you wanted to then make that sound more idiomatic in English, would probably add the idea of the verb to be. You have said, it is vain to worship God. It is vain to serve God. If any of you have any questions or suggestions, feel free to raise your hand and jump in anytime. Because I'm not Dr. Bartelt, so. Okay, and so here's the harsh words. This is the accusation God brings to the people. They're saying that it's a vain and an emptiness to serve God. Now, why is that? Okay, you notice the Othnach under Elohim, so this is the major division in verse 14. So then the next line, Uma Beitza ki shamarnu mishmarto. And what prophet, Batza, Beitza, is, let's see, that's translated in various ways as, it's a bad term. It's usually translated in the English as prophet, but it also refers to gain made by violence, an unjust gain. And so BBD says here that it's sort of the idea of prophet with selfish intentions. You know, in other words, what gain, what profit, what profit, and then you may add the idea of the verb to be here, what is the profit that we, and we have a perfect verb, that we keep his charge, mishmarto. BBD suggests here that this means guard, watch, or charge. I looked in the various translations, and they usually go with, let's say, I think RSV goes with charge. Other people go with ordinances or laws, precepts, that kind of thing. So it's a good object of the word shamar, to keep, to watch, to guard. So what is the profit that we have kept his guard, his charge, his ordinances? And then the next line, Veki halaknu kedoreneith, and that we have walked, and this next word, kedoraneith, is a hapax legomena, appears only here, and BBD suggests that it's an adverb, and it means as one, as mourning or mournfully. So why have we walked mournfully? And I looked at King James and NIV and RSV, and they all take it, you know, why do we walk mournfully or as one who's mourning, that kind of idea. But it's a hapax, and Dr. Bartelt suggests in his sermon study in CJ that it probably has, it's probably a word that has sort of a dark intention. So the two things that they say are useless that have to relate to serving God is there's no profit in keeping his charge, and there's no profit in walking mournfully, and then Mifenei Yahweh Tzabaoth, before Yahweh of hosts. And so this is, Yahweh has accused them of speaking harshly against him. They respond, well, what have we spoken against you? Or how have we spoken against you? And then the prophet makes clear, you're saying that it's an empty thing to worship God. And then what you're saying is, well, there's no profit in keeping his charge. There's no profit in walking mournfully before him. You know, and I guess the idea here would be obeying the Torah, and then the whole idea of repenting, you know, letting the law do its work. In other words, there's no profit in that. That's what they have said. Going on to verse 15. Ve'atha anaknu me'asherim zedim. Okay, very interesting. It says, and now, or if you wanted to take it that way, it's disjunctive, so yet now, and then anaknu, we. And so the prophet is including himself with the category of you guys, you know, you guys who have spoken against Yahweh. Now he's using the we. He's putting himself in there. We, and here's a PL participle of the root is ashar, which according to call, or according to BBD, it's call meaning is to go straight, but in the PL it means to, it also means to go straight, to be direct, but also to call happy or pronounce happy. And so, and now we are calling happy. And if you remember the first word in Psalm 1, Asheri Ha'ish, blessed is the man, happy is the man. This verb relates to that adjective, Asheri Ha'ish, blessed is the man. So we are calling happy Zedim. And according to BBD, this is an adjective for insolent, presumptuous. And so we are calling blessed insolent, presumptuous men. This is translated in King James is proud, and in NIV is arrogant. So, and BBD says insolent or presumptuous. We are calling these, you know, the bad guys, we are calling them happy. Gam nevu ose risheya. Okay, and we have the conjunction also even. They are established who do wickedness. And so we are pronouncing, we are calling happy those who are insolent, proud, arrogant, presumptuous. And even they are established. That's the Nifal perfect of Bana. And that means to be established, to be set up. A participle of Asa, a call participle. The one, and it's in a construct form, the ones doing, and then the noun, wickedness. Okay, they're established, they're set up, they're the ones who seem to be doing well. And then gam banaknu Elohim vayima le tu. Okay, and even that, okay, and that verb there is, the root is bakan. And it's a call perfect, third common plural. And this word means to escape or to, this word means to try or to examine, okay? And so even they who are tempting God, and then we have a call imperfect while consecutive. And I would translate this, the wow as that here instead of and, that. And the malat here means to escape or slip away, that they have slipped away. Okay, so beginning at the head of the line, okay, even they are established who do wickedness. Also, they who try God, or they who have tried God, that they escaped, that they slipped through. That's malat, the last verb there. Okay, and so now we, and note how the prophet puts himself in that group, are calling happy the wicked, and these wicked people are those who are, they seem to be established even though they're doing wickedness, and even though they're trying and tempting God, they seem to escape. And so this seems to be a complaint echoed in some of the Psalms, and probably a complaint that a lot of us can relate to. In other words, God's established his Torah, and you know, you're supposed to see the wicked punished and the doers of good exalted. But that's not what seems to be happening here on earth, and obviously not in the days of Malachi either. What's happening is that the proud are the ones who are blessed. We call them happy. The people who are not just the insolent, but they're actually doing wickedness and tempting God and escaping. And this is the content of what the people are saying. And so then it seems a natural corollary to this is, well, if that's true, then, you know, be like them, right? In other words, are they complaining against God? That may be part of it, but also the fact that, in a sense, they're saying, well, it doesn't really matter. You know, let's join in. Okay, verse 16. Okay, we have the verb oz, and here you note there's a note for the footnote, and this is really the major note for this section, the only one I'm going to refer to, because in the Septuagint, if you look down there in the Septuagint, that's translated tauta, and then they, you know, probably read zo or zoth. In other words, what we have in the Masoretic version is then, but the Septuagint has tauta, these. And the implication of this is that if you read with the Masoretes, Oz, then, we have a setting up of a contrast between what is going on in verse 14 and 15, because now in verse 16 we're going to be looking at those who fear Yahweh. But if it's these things, then the people spoken of in verse 16 are the same people who've said verses 14 and 15. So let's read 16, and then maybe that'll probably become a little more clear. So Oz Nidberu Yere Yahweh. Okay, and here we have the use of Devar in the Nephal again. Note in verse 13 that's used, the second word from the end of verse 13. This again is the idea of speaking reciprocally, speaking among ourselves to oneself. And so, and I'm going to go with the Masoretic translation here. Then they speak among themselves, and who is this? We have a participle in the constrict, those who are fearing Yahweh. Okay. Now, if this is then, the contrast now is between those who are fearing Yahweh and the insolent who tempt him and who do evil. But if you translate the Oz as, if you go with the Septuagint, say these things, in other words, these things just spoken of priorly are being spoken by those who fear Yahweh, and that sort of makes things even worse. In other words, the people who are making this complaint are the people who fear Yahweh, you know. But if you go with the Masoretes now, there's a contrast between what you are saying about the insolent in verses 14 and 15 and now what those who fear Yahweh are saying. Dr. Bartelt writes on this in CJ a little bit. I'm going with the Masoretes just because. Okay, so then those who fear Yahweh will speak among themselves. Ish eth re'au, re'eu, okay. A man with his friend. There's eif. I'm taking that as, instead of direct object marker, I'm taking it as a preposition with. So that goes well with the idea of divar and the nifal. So they are speaking, those who are fearing Yahweh are speaking, a man with his friend, his companion, va yik shave Yahweh va yishema. Okay, and this is what they're saying. And Yahweh listened, and Yahweh heard. And so this is going against, you can see that this seems to be showing a contrast with what's being said. In other words, now there's something different being said about God. Not that he seems to not care and lets, you know, the insolent and the sinners prosper, but on the contrary, he listened and heard.
Vayik thev sefer zikaron lefanai.
Okay, and here's a nifal of the word of the verb kathav, to write, and a scroll of remembrance will be written before me. Before him, a scroll of remembrance will be written before him. Interesting idea, you know, book of life. Here's a scroll of remembrance, and it's a scroll that is the subject of the verb. The scroll of remembrance will be written before him. And whenever you have a word, a noun like zakar, which, what's Veltz's term? I better not use it in case I get it wrong. Is it external entailment for nouns that have a verbal idea? You have to consider that verbal idea. And so with zakar, you have to ask, who's the subject of this? Who's the one who's doing the remembering? And it seems here the context is it's Yahweh who's listened and heard. He's the one who's going to be doing the remembering. And then the next question to ask is, okay, what is being remembered? And of course, a good Lutheran, we would say, well, he's not going to remember our sins. And we say, well, what he remembers are usually his own acts of graciousness. But then other people would say, well, he also remembers the deeds, right? You know, the works of men. And that seems to go with the context of what's happened. In other words, what's good about the scroll of remembrance? Is it going to be that he's remembered the deeds of the insolent and the ones who tempt him and the ones who do evil? In other words, it seems that they're prospering now, but he's going to remember and he's going to get them someday. Even if it seems right now they're the ones who are doing well in this world, they'll have their day. Let's see, am I out of time? Okay, I'll just hurry on. Okay, I'll just translate the rest directly. Okay. Okay. To the ones who fear Yahweh and who, let's see, what's that? And who think, and the ones who are thinking his name, okay? And so this book of remembrance is for, in other words, these people, these who fear Yahweh and think of his name, okay? And they will be. And they will be to him, says Yah. And they will be to him, says Yahweh Tzabaoth.
To me, right?
Thank you. And they will be to me, says Yahweh Tzabaoth. And that's the idiom. They will be to me. In other words, they will be mine. Who? These people who fear Yahweh and who think on His name. Okay. Teyom, on the day which I will make. On the day which I will make property, that segula has a sense, according to BBD, and how it's usually translated as valuable property, treasure. King James translate as jewel, that is jewels. And this refers back to those who Yahweh is going to make his, namely the people who fear him and who think on his name. They become his treasure, his jewels. And so, in light of this, it seems that the scroll of remembrance is Yahweh's remembering them. Okay, 17b. okay, the verb there, va kamalti. Notice the shift in the accent to the suffix. This is a wow. This is a perfect wow consecutive, and kamal can mean to spare or to have compassion. And it's used with all. A parallel verse is Zechariah 11, verse 6, where God says he won't spare. And it's this verb, kamal, plus all. Okay, he will have compassion on them, or he will spare them. Just as, and here's the same verb, a man spares his son who serves him, or who worships him. And there you have the use, again, kamal with all, just as a man will spare his son who serves him. And so Yahweh will have compassion upon them, those who fear him and who think upon his name, just as a man has compassion upon the son who serves him. Verse 18, page 1086. Okay, and here we have, again, perfect while consecutive. Notice the accent on the formative at the end. Okay, and now he's addressing you again, but this seems to be you, the fearers of Yahweh. And you will turn, there's shuv, you will return, you will turn, and you will see between the righteous to, literally, to between righteous to evil, between the ones, a participle of avad, the ones serving God, to he who, there's a shar, the relative pronoun, he who does not worship him. I checked in BBD, and there's an idiomatic use of bain with the preposition lamed, bain, lamed, and this use suggests a distinguishing, and it's used usually in context of dividing and judging. And so you will see between, you will see the distinction between the righteous and the evil. You will see the distinction between the ones who worship God and he who does not worship God. And so the conclusion here is, in the beginning we see the complaint that the people have against, well, the complaint God has against the people is that they're speaking harshly against him, and what That is that they're saying insolent men and doers of evil and those who test God, they escape his judgment. And at the end, we see that, no, they don't. In the end, the distinction will be made. But then going back to the idea of the book of remembrance, it's not just that he remembers evil. We have to ask as Christians, what's the basis for which he will have compassion upon them, those who fear him, that he spares them? In other words, it's sort of the idea that maybe they shouldn't be spared, you know. I guess that, I don't know if the gospel lesson answers that. It probably, what is the gospel lesson? Which one? Oh, okay. But in there we could see the idea of grace. In other words, he's, one of the things God is remembering is that he is the God who has compassion, that he will spare those who worship him. I think Dr. Bartelt makes that parallel in his sermon study, but this is a scroll of remembrance, and so is that the book of life? I don't know. Sorry, I went a little over. Any reactions?